Welcome to the fourth programme in the Bookworm series, broadcast on Near FM on 90.3 FM and online on www.near.ie. This series is all about young people reading from a children's novel, Gangster Granny, by David Walliams. The objectives of the series are to encourage primary school children to read more and indeed write more, to improve their literacy skills and to develop a deeper love of books. My name is Declan Cahill, and to help me present the programme, I'm delighted to have the assistance of the pupils of one of the six classes of St. David's Boys National School, Kilmore Road, R10, Dublin 5. And I hope that other schools in the area will listen into the broadcast, thus encouraging other school children to read more. So during this programme, we're going to have six boys from Miss Cahill's sixth class to read from the novel Gangster Granny by David Walliams, and maybe I might read some pages also, and then we'll have a discussion on the group. And it's fitting that the programme is being recorded in the school library, which is a wonderful facility to have for all the boys in the school. I'm delighted to welcome six boys to the programme: Jamie Quinn, Owen Murphy, Andrew Woolahan, Javans Tiloki, Colin Murphy and Lee Maher. Okay, so let's start the first section of the book, and we're going to listen to Jamie Quinn.
Chapter 11, Cheesy Beans and Sausage. Ben sped home on his bike, not even noticing his burning legs and aching chest. He was going so fast, he thought the police might give him a speeding ticket. As the wheels raced round, so did his mind. Could his boring old granny really be a gangster granny? That must be why she liked books about gangsters so much. She was one. He slid through the door just as the familiar Strictly Stars dancing theme tune blasted out from the living room. He had made it home just in time, but as Ben was about to disappear upstairs and pretended he had been in his bedroom doing his homework, Mum burst into the kitchen. "What are you doing?" she asked suspiciously. "You look very sweaty." "Oh, nothing," said Ben, feeling very sweaty. "Look at you," she continued. As she approached him, "You are sweating like a pig." Ben had seen a few pigs in his life, and none of them had been sweating. In fact, pigs fans everywhere will tell you that pigs don't even have sweat glands, so they can't sweat. "Wow, this book is actually really educational." "I'm not sweating," Ben protested. Being accused of sweating made him sweat even more. "You are sweating. Have you been out running?" "No," replied Ben, and now very sweaty Ben. "Ben, don't lie to me. I'm your mother," she said, pointing at herself, a false nail flying off into the air in the process. Her false nails came off a lot. Once Ben had even found one in his microwavable paella bolognese. "If you haven't been out running, Ben, then why are you sweating?" Ben had to think fast. The Strictly Stars dancing theme tune was coming to the end. "I was dancing," he blurted out. "Dancing?" Mum didn't look convinced. Ben was no Flavio Flavioli, and of course he hated ballroom dancing. "Yes, well, I have changed my mind about ballroom dancing. I love it."
Thanks very much, Jamie. That was very good. And now we're going to have Owen Murphy reading the next section of the book.
"But you said you hated it," shot back an increasingly suspicious Mum. "Many, many, many times. Only the other week, you said that you'd rather eat your own bogies than watch that rubbish. Hearing you say that was like a dagger through my heart." Mum was becoming visibly upset at the memory. "I'm sorry, Mum. I really am." Ben reached out a hand to comfort her, and another false nail fell onto the ground. "But now I love it. Honestly, I was just watching strictly through the crack in the door and copying all the moves. Mum beamed with pride. She looked as if her whole life suddenly had meaning. Her face turned strangely happy, yet sad, as if this was destiny. Do you want to be a... She took a deep breath. Professional dancer? Where's my cheesy beans and sausages, wife? Called Dad from the living room. Shut your face, P. Mum's eyes were wet with tears of joy. She hadn't cried so much since Flavio was kicked out of the show in week 2 last year. Flavio has been forced to partner Dame Rachel Prejudice, who was so podgy, all he could do was drag her around the floor. Ben desperately searched for a way to get out of this one. Yeah, that really wasn't it. Yes, I knew it, cried Mum. P, come in here a moment. Ben has got something he needs to tell you. Dad trudged in wearily. What is it, Ben? You're not joining the circus, are you? My word, you are sweaty.
Thank you very much, Owen. And now we're going to have two boys to read the next section. And the first of those boys is Andrew Woolahan. Right, Andrew, your section of the book now, please.
No, Pete, said Mum slowly and deliberately, as if she was about to read out the name of a winner in an award ceremony. Ben doesn't want to be a silly old plumber anymore. Thank goodness for that, said Dad. He wants to be... Mum looked at her son and tell him, Ben. Ben opened his mouth, but before he could say anything, Mum chimed in. Ben wants to be a ballroom dancer. Oh, there is a God, exclaimed Dad. He looked up at the nicotine-stained ceiling as if he might catch a glimpse of the Divine One. He was just practicing in the kitchen, jabbered Mum excitedly, copying all the moves from the show. Dad looked into his son's eyes and shook his hand manfully. That's wonderful news, my boy. Your mum and me haven't achieved much in our lives, what with mum being a nail polisher. I am a nail technician, Pete, corrected Mum scornfully. There is a world of difference, Pete. You do know that. Nail technician, sorry, and me being just a boring old security guard because I was too fat for the police. The most excitement I've had all year was when I stopped a man in a wheelchair speeding out the store with a tin of custard. Concealed under his blanket, but you becoming a ballroom dancer, well, this is the greatest thing ever happened to us. The very greatest, said Mum. The very, very greatest, agreed Dad. Really, it's the very, very, very greatest, said Mum. Let's just agree it's extremely great, said Dad, irritated. Only I warn you, boy, it's not going to be easy. If you train 8 hours a day, every day for the next 20 years, you might just get on the TV show. Maybe he can do the American version, exclaimed Mum. Oh, Pete, just imagine our boy, a huge star in America. Well, let's not jump the gun, wife. He's not won the British one yet. Right now, we have to think about entering him for a junior competition. You're right, Pete. Gail told me there's one in the town hall just before Christmas. Crack open the sparkling wine, wife. Our son is going to be a cha-cha-cha champion. A naughty word exploded in Ben's head. How on earth was he going to get out of this?
Thank you very much, Andrew. And now we're going to have Javans reading the next number of pages.
Chapter 12, The Love Bomb. Ben has spent the whole of Sunday morning being measured by Mum for his dance outfit. She had stayed up through the night sketching possible designs. Under duress, he was forced to choose one and pointed a limp finger at the one that he thought was least the hideous. Mum's hand-drawn option ranged all the way from the embarrassing to the humiliating. There was the woodland, fruit cocktail, thunder and lightning, accident and emergency, ice and slice, a hedgerow and a badger, the quality streets, egg and bacon, confetti, the underwater world, burning love, cheese and pickle, the solar system and piano man. But the one that Ben thought was the least worst was the love bomb. We will have to find you a nice young girl to partner with for the competition, said Mum excitedly, as she accidentally ran one of her fake nails under the sewing machine and it exploded.
Thank you very much, Javans, for reading out those last few pages. And those last few pages were describing costumes that Ben's mother had designed that she wanted him to wear in this dancing competition. So you can just imagine what they were like. And now we're going to have two, the last two boys are Callum Murphy and Lee Maher. And first of all, we've got Callum up to read the next three pages.
Ben hadn't thought about dance partners. Not only was he going to have to dance, he was going to have to dance with a girl. And not just any girl, but a revoltingly precocious, sparkly, fake-tanned, leotard-wearing, over-made-up one. Ben was still at the age when he thought girls were as appealing as frog spawn. "Oh, I'm just going to dance on my own," he spluttered. "A solo piece," exclaimed Mum. "How original. In fact, I can't stand here talking all day. I'd better go and practice," said Ben, as he disappeared upstairs to his room. He shut the door, turned on his radio, and then climbed out the window and raced over to Granny's bungalow on his bike. "So, you were running off into the woods when Lord Davenport started shooting at you," Ben was eagerly prompting his granny, but for the moment her mind looked blank. "Was I?" said Granny, looking increasingly befuddled. "That's where the story ended last night. You said you had snatched the ring from the Davenport's bedroom and were running across the lawn when you heard shots." "Oh, yes, yes," muttered Granny, her face suddenly illuminated. Ben smiled broadly. He suddenly remembered how he had used to love his granny telling stories when he was younger, transporting him to a magical world. A world where you paint pictures in your mind that are more thrilling than all the movies or TV shows or video games in the universe. Only a couple of weeks ago, he had pretended to be asleep to stop her telling him a bedtime story. Clearly, he'd forgotten how thrilling stories could be. "I was running and running," continued Granny breathlessly, as if she was actually running. "And I heard a shot ring out. Then another. I knew from the sound that it was definitely a shotgun rather than a rifle." "What's the difference?" asked Ben. "Well, a rifle shoots one bullet and is more accurate, but a shotgun sprays hundreds of little deadly balls of lead. Any idiot can hit you if they fire a shotgun in your direction." "And did he?" said Ben. His smile had faded. Now he was genuinely worried. "Yes, but luckily I was far away by then, so I was only grazed. I could hear the dogs barking too. They were hunting me and I was only a small girl. If they had caught me, the hounds would have ripped me to shreds." Ben gasped in horror. "So how did you get away?" he asked.
Thank you very much, Callum. And finally, we have Lee Maher, who is going to read the last section of the book for this programme.
"I took a chance. I couldn't outrun the dogs through the forest. The fastest runner in the world couldn't. But I knew the woods really well. I used to play in them for hours with my brothers and sisters. I knew if I could just get across the stream, then the dogs would lose the scent. How come? Dogs can't follow scents across water. And there was a great oak tree on the other side of the stream. If I climbed that tree, I might be safe. Ben couldn't imagine his granny climbing stairs, let alone a tree. She had lived in her bungalow ever since Ben could remember. More shots rang out through the darkness as I ran towards the stream, continued the old lady, and I stumbled in the gloom of the forest. I tripped on a tree root and fell face first in the mud. Scrambling to my feet, I turned around, see an army of men on horseback led by Lord Davenport. They were carrying flaming torches and holding shotguns. The whole forest was lit up with the fire from the torches. I jumped into the stream. It was around this time of year, the depth of winter, and the water was like ice. The cold shocked me, and I could hardly breathe. I clapped my hand over my mouth to stifle the scream. I could hear the dogs getting nearer and nearer, barking and barking. They must have been dozens of them. I looked behind me and I could see their sharp teeth gleaming in the moonlight. So I waded across the stream and started climbing the tree. My hands were muddy, my legs and feet were wet, and I kept slipping down the trunk. I frantically rubbed my hands on my nightshirt and began to climb again. I scrambled to the very top of the tree and stayed as still as I could. The dog's ferocious barking became a distance, and after a while the torches were just specks in the distance. I was safe. I shivered up the tree for hours. I waited until dawn, slid down the tree and made my way back to our cottage. I crept into bed and lay there for a few minutes before the sun rose. Ben pictured everything she described perfectly in his mind. Granny had him utterly spellbound.
Thank you very much, Lee. And that was Callum and Lee reading, the last two boys reading the section. So what I'll do now, I'll continue a bit of the reading, OK? So I'll pick up where Lee left off there on page 114. "Did they come looking for you?" he asked. "Well, no one got a good look at me, so Davenport had his men search everywhere in the village. Every cottage was turned upside down to look for the ring." "And didn't you say anything?" "I wanted to. I felt so guilty. But I knew if I owned up, I would be in deep trouble. Lord Davenport would have had me publicly flogged in the village square." "So what did you do?" "I swallowed it." Ben couldn't believe his ears. "The ring, Granny. You swallowed the ring." "Well, I thought it was the best way to hide it, in my stomach. A few days later, it came out when I went to the toilet." "Ooh! That must have been painful," said Ben, his bum wincing at the thought. Passing a big diamond ring out of his bottom didn't sound in any way enjoyable. "It was painful. Excruciating, in fact," Granny grimaced. "The good thing was that our cottage had been searched already from top to bottom." Not my bottom. The bottom of the cottage, I mean," Ben chuckled. "And Davenport's men had moved on to search in the next village. So one night I went off into the woods and hid the ring. I placed it where no one could ever look, under a rock in the stream." "Clever," said Ben. "But that ring was only the first of many, Ben. Stealing had become the biggest thrill of my life, and as I lay in bed each night, all I dreamed about was stealing more and more diamonds. That ring was just the beginning," continued Granny in a low whisper, staring deep into Ben's innocent young eyes. "That was the beginning of a lifetime of crime." Chapter 13. A Lifetime of Crime. Hours passed in what seemed like minutes as Granny told her grandson how she had stolen every one of the dazzling items spread out on the living room floor. The huge tiara that had belonged to the wife of the President of the United States of America, the First Lady. Granny told Ben how, over 50 years earlier, she had sailed all the way to America on a cruise liner to steal it from the White House in Washington, and that while sailing back home, she had robbed every rich lady on the ship of her jewels, how she was caught red-handed by the captain of the ship and escaped by diving overboard and swimming the last few miles of the Atlantic Ocean back to England with all that jewellery hidden in her knickers. Granny told Ben that the sparkling emerald earrings that had been in her little bungalow for decades were worth over £1 million each. They had once belonged to the wife of an enormously wealthy Indian Maharaja, a Maharani. The old lady recounted how she enlisted the help of a herd of elephants to steal them. She had coaxed the elephants to stand on top of each other to form a giant ladder so she could scale the wall of the fort in India, where the earrings were kept in the royal bedchamber. The most amazing tale of all was how she stole the enormous deep blue diamond and sapphire brooch that sat sparkling on her worn living room carpet. She had told Ben it had once belonged to the last Empress of Russia, who ruled with her husband, the Tsar, before the Communist Revolution of 1917. It had, for many years, been under the bulletproof glass at the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, guarded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year by a platoon of fearsome Russian soldiers. This theft had required the most elaborate plan of all. Granny had hidden in the ancient suit of armour in the museum, which dated back hundreds of years to the time of Catherine the Great. Every time the soldiers looked the other way, she would edge forward in the metal suit a few millimetres until she got close enough to the brooch. It took her a week. "What? Like Granny's footsteps?" said Ben. "Exactly, young man," she replied. "That I smashed the glass with the silver axe I was holding and grabbed the brooch." "How did you escape, Granny?" "That's a good question. Now, how did I escape? Granny looked very flummoxed. Sorry, it's my age, boy. I forget things." Ben smiled supportively. "That's okay, Granny." Soon, the old lady's memory seemed to come back into focus. "Ah, yes, 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 I remember," she continued. "I ran outside into the courtyard of the museum, leaped into the barrel of a huge cannon, and then fired myself to safety." Ben pictured this for a moment. His granny, in deepest, darkest Russia, flying through the air in an ancient suit of armour. It's hard to believe, but how else could this little old lady come to have such an astonishing collection of priceless gems? Ben loved Granny's daring tales. At home, Ben had never had stories read or told to him. His parents always switched on the television and slumped down on the sofa when they got home from work. Hearing the old lady talk was so exciting, Ben wished he could move in with her. He could listen to Granny all day. "There can't be a jewel in the world you haven't stolen," said Ben. "Oh, yes, there is, young man. Hang on, what's that?" Granny was pointing behind Ben's head, an expression of horror on her face. It's... What? Said Ben, not daring to look round and see what she was pointing at. A shiver ran down his spine. "Whatever you do," said Granny, "don't turn round." Now we have the six boys who read from the book earlier gathered around, and we've got Callum, Owen, Javans, Andrew, Lee and Jamie, and we're going to have a bit of a chat now about the book and other matters. Right. Now, this book is great, isn't it? Gangster Granny by David Williams. And tell me now, why would you recommend this book to other people? Would anybody like, Devons?
Yeah, it's funny. It's kind of sad. Funny, sad at the same time as well. I just think it's great because it has loads of adventures on it.
Yeah. And you've mentioned that it's funny and sad. That's a very interesting technique. So, you know, sometimes you can laugh and sometimes you almost cry. What parts did you find were sad now in the book?
At the end when... I actually don't want to spoil this.
Yeah, but earlier on maybe. How about maybe when Ben realised that Granny had heard him saying things about her?
Yeah.
That was a bit sad, wasn't it? And would you feel, if you were in that situation, would you feel very sad?
Yes, I would.
Yeah, it's not nice really to say things like that.
No, it's not.
Especially when people are not there. So that's the big lesson that the author is trying to get across here. Anybody else? Owen, how about you? Why do you think that, why would you recommend this to other people?
Because like, when it says granny in the book, you wouldn't really read it. But then when it says gangster granny, it involves you more. And you want to read it more. And I found it very interesting because like, it's not like a normal granny, just like sitting down.
And when you say that it got you involved, it sort of pulled you into the book, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you find, have you come across that with other books?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
the names of it really like, it attracts
you. Attracts you, yeah. And that's the sign of the writer, isn't it? Because even what was mentioned in part of the reading today about painting pictures, don't you? You form these pictures in your own head, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the part when the granny found herself in Lord Davenport's bedroom and she dropped the ring in last week and she got a fright, and then we heard about the being chased and so on? How do you think you'd feel if you were in that situation? You mentioned, Evans, about being happy and sad or whatever. Would that be very frightening, do you think?
I'll think it's real. I'll be afraid because I'll be running for ages.
Yeah, well, that's. Well, I would too. Can you imagine somebody with a shotgun and horses and men with torches and dogs and the big teeth ready to bite you?
Yeah.
Can you imagine what it must be like? Lee, what do you think?
I'd be real scared. I'd just run.
Yeah, and would you think you'd run up the tree like Granny did?
No, I probably wouldn't think of it.
Yeah, that was clever thinking. Yeah. And wasn't a good idea when she ran across the stream so the dogs wouldn't follow her, wouldn't follow the scent.
Yeah.
So then she went up the tree. That's right. How about you?
I'd probably think it'd be thrilling, but it would also be scary.
Thrilling and scary, that's good, right, okay. And do you think that, what would you do? Would you run like blazes, or what would you, try hide or what?
I'd run.
Run. Yeah, and are you a good runner?
Not really, but...
Which I tell you, if there's a fella with a gun after you,
I'd run.
Right? And Evans, how about you?
I would feel like my heart's heart pumping.
And it'd be boom, 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 boom.
I'll be pressured.
Yeah. Why do you think it's important to read, Evans?
It's practice for other books you want to read as well, and that's all.
Yeah. Anybody else, Jamie?
I think people should read more because it's really, some books are funny, some books are sad, and that's basically it.
And you get experience of all those things.
Yeah,
very good. Anybody else? How about you, Andrew? Why do you think people should read?
Because... it'll help you get a better education.
Like, very good.
For reading.
Right.
And like some books that you do read, like some of them do be like really, really good. And some of them like you'd think like books that adults read and all would like be all boring and other stuff.
So you would certainly say it's very important. How about you, Lee? Why do you think it's important to read?
Because the more you read, you get better at reading.
Very good. Practice makes perfect, isn't that right?
Yeah.
And some words you come across are hard, aren't they? I mean, and that's okay. I mean, that's why you build up your vocabulary by coming across new words. When I was a small boy your age, my mother would make me, if I came across a word that I couldn't understand, she'd make me look up the word in the dictionary. You know, the dictionary of all the words. And that way you learn how to spell it and to work it out, because it's very easy to skip over a word. If you don't know it, it's always good to look it up, and then you'll always remember, because the more words you build up, the better you will become when writing and discussing and chatting to people. Evans?
Yeah, and if you don't read, you won't learn anything.
Right, that's very true, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. And how about you, Callum? Why do you think it's important to read?
Yeah, because if you read, you can learn stuff from it, and in the part in the book where it says pigs don't have sweat glands.
Exactly, they are, yeah. And pigs can get sunburned. Yeah, did you know that? Because their skin is so pink and fair. You've been listening to Bookworms on Near FM, and you have heard Jamie Quinn, Owen Murphy, Andrew Woolahan, Javans Taloki, Colin Murphy, Lee Maher, reading from David Walliams' book, Gangster Granny, in the library of St. David's Boys National School in Artane. Please listen in again next week for more readings. And of course, you can listen to the programme again by going to the website www.near.ie. My thanks go to the boys from St. David's School, their class teacher, Miss Cahill, the school principal, Mr. Moore, and also to my colleagues from Near FM who helped me present the programme, Anil Weldon, Dorothy Meyer Holtkamp, and Anise Amastoy. My name is Declan Cahill, and if you want to find out more about bookworms, all you have to do is ring Near FM on 867 1190. Sláinte fáil, and remember, keep reading.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.